Wednesday, 5 p.m., hump day, time for American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. I am your host for the next hour. My name is Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi, and we are so glad to have you aboard. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you can spend the next hour with us as we try to turn you on to an album that you may or may not already be familiar with. If not, then I really want you to stay on board and tuned in. We've been doing this for quite a while now, playing albums in their entirety, trying to convince people that some of these old albums are just not growing old. They are pretty awesome. and that's the whole point. So we started this in 1964, a few years back, and we're working our way up to the present. One list is 500 albums of the top 500. I'm sorry, 500 albums of the top 40, excuse me, old top 40 hit albums. And there's another 500 that we call the alternative top 40, albums that never did reach the top 40 on the charts. And that's what we're going to play today, an album that did not chart at all here in America. But it's one of my personal favorites. It's a great sleeper album. It's by John Cale. Ex-member of the Velvet Underground. And the album is entitled Paris 1919. Now, if you were a fan of the Velvet Underground, and if you were a fan of the Velvet Underground when they were actually working, then you are pretty special, because not many people even were that aware of the band in their own time. It's the sort of thing their fame and their legend grew and until it reached like remarkable proportions. And John Cale and Lou Reed were the main drivers of the band. They pretty much worked from completely different angles. And the way that they would butt heads had an awful lot to do with what made the band work so well. But it didn't last long. John Cale was only with the band for the first two albums. Inarguably, the most experimental of the two albums, which is exactly what caused some of the friction between Lou Reed and John Cale. There's no doubt that Lou Reed was the alpha male of the group, and that he wanted things to go the way that he wanted it to go. But John Cale was always coming up with ideas that made things very complicated. And after a while, Lou was just basically saying, you know what, it's him or me. And they realized that they couldn't work without Lou. So eventually, John Cale left the group. And Mo Tucker, the drummer, the band in general, felt bad about it, whether it was Sterling Morrison and Mo Tucker, the other two members. Mo said that her quote is, when John left, it was really sad and I felt really bad. And of course, this was going to really influence the music because John's a lunatic. I think we became a little more normal, which is fine. It was good music, good songs. It was never the same, though. It was good stuff, a lot of good songs, but just the lunacy factor was gone. John basically brought that to the band. I mean, it was basically a friend of the band who said that, Lou once told Robert Quine that the reason why he had to get rid of Cale in the band was Cale's ideas were just too out there. For example, he wanted to record the next album with the amplifiers underwater. So he had ideas. And when now he's out, Velvet Underground stayed together for another two albums, a live album. Then Lou Reed began his solo career. And in the meantime, John Cale was putting out albums quietly, not selling very many. And they were interesting, but John Cale himself more or less steps back from them, saying that at that point in time, he feels as though he wasn't displaying any of his own personality. He was really just, getting his feet wet, getting a feel for what it was that he wanted to achieve. And I think the first album where he felt that he really came to terms with it was on this album, Paris 1919. First time I heard it, I was stunned because I thought it was one of the most beautiful albums I had heard. And this is from the guy who was the crazy guy in Velvet Underground. So you would never expect it. Let's play a track, and we'll talk about it a little more as we get into it. From the album Paris 1919, this is the opening track, one of my favorites. I play this at Christmas all the time. It's called Child's Christmas in Wales. Is one of my all-time favorite sleeper songs, a song that I've never really got a lot of airplay, but it's just every time I hear it, it's just incredibly pleasurable. And it's just interesting to compare the whole Lou Reed and John Cale thing. Now, it's indisputable that John Cale was the nut in Velvet Underground and the one who was coming up with these musical ideas that were really wacky. And I'll be honest, like on the second album, White Light, White Heat, a lot of that album is really tough to listen to because a lot of the ideas that John Cale had were not commercial ideas, which is exactly why Lou Reed wanted to push him out because he was taking it too far, I think, in a direction. And Lou Reed wanted the band to be accessible. So it's ironic then that as Lou Reed starts his solo career and John is into his own solo career, that they begin to become opposites in very different directions. Because at this point in time, John Cale, this album is an incredibly accessible album, as you will hear. And Lou Reed is, at this point in time, putting out something like the album Berlin. I don't know if you know the album, but here's what I've written about it. It's very interesting to compare contemporary albums from the alumni of the Velvet Underground circa 1973. Lou Reed grabbed production genius Bob Ezrin to orchestrate what is perhaps the most depressing album of all time. Do you, God forbid, know anything else that might even compete with the overwhelming misery and horror that is presented on his album Berlin? Alcoholism, cruelty, depression, domestic abuse, apathy, drug addiction, losing your family to child services, and suicide does not make for a sing-along with Lou party. But the scars left by Berlin are permanent and sadly beautiful. We will be getting to that album in a few weeks, by the way, since it was released very closely to Paris 1919. All in all, though, Berlin was a bit much. Meanwhile, his bandmate moved 180 degrees away from the darkness of Velvet Underground and produced a dazzlingly beautiful album, full of spectral imagery and sepia-toned memories. It is a stunningly literate, chock-full of enough references to other writers and works of art to keep you occupied for months. Graham Greene and Macbeth are song titles, while lyrics mention, or imply, Dylan Thomas, Billy Wilder, and Enoch Powell, among others. Interspersed with this are enough geographical references for a National Geographic magazine, including Andalusia, Wales, Antarctica, and, of course, Paris and the country France. I am somewhat stunned to learn that Little Feats, Lowell George, and Richie Hayward make up Cale's band for this record, while the Crusaders' Wilton Felder handled bass and saxophone. Their work here has little in common with their own projects, displaying a diversity in playing styles that is quite impressive. Orchestration plays an important role on both Reed's and Cale's album, but they use the classical instrumentation in significantly different ways. Berlin has strict dynamic arrangements that clash with Reed's blasé delivery. Cale, on the other hand, melts into the classical arrangements of Paris 1919, with strings complementing his melodies. Paris 1919 stands out in Cale's collected work because it differs from so much of his other work, which often is either experimental or darker in tone. After his tenure with the Velvet Underground, Cale worked sporadically on decidedly uncommercial projects, like his Dream Syndicate project and a collaboration with minimalist Terry Riley. For his commercial releases, Paris 1919 is sandwiched between Vintage Violence and Fear, albums whose titles belie their darker subject matter. In the midst of this, Paris 1919 was like a breath of fresh air, and it remains the most significantly artistic commercial release of his solo career. Velvet Underground aside, John Cale has proven himself to be a stunningly diverse and creative artist, and if you are new to his work, Paris 1919 is probably the most palatable point of entry. So, let's enter again and play track two, another of my favorites from the album, this one entitled Hanky Panky Know How.
If the sashaying of gentlemen is your grievance now and then, what's needed are some memories of plaining lakes. Those plaining lakes will surely calm you down. Nothing frightens me more than religion at my door. I never answer panic knocking, falling down the stairs upon the lawn. What law? There's a law for everything, for elephants that sing to feed, for cows that agriculture won't allow. Hanky-panky know-how, hanky-panky know-how, hanky-panky know-how. Hanky Know-How. Hanky Panky Know-How. Hanky Panky Know-How.
These songs are so unique to me, and I would think you'd have to see that they are quite moving as well once you begin to get familiar with them. By the way, Paris 1919 was a reference to the Paris 1919 Peace Conference that was taking place after World War I, which apparently Cale is alluding to it because of the way that land was divided up so poorly, it ended up putting us in the dire situation that we've been in for the past 100 years with so many border skirmishes and fights and wars and everything based upon the fact that, you know, basically things were just divvied up indiscriminately and virtually nobody was happy with the end result. And I think that's part of the reference of the title, although you don't hear that in the songs or the lyrics. We'll just keep moving our way through the album. The next track from the album is a song called The Endless Plane of Fortune.
With loaded darts.
this is such a literate album as well that it, listening to the lyrics, it's almost like going to the bibliography section of an encyclopedia where you hear things and you're like, oh, let me look that up. What page is that on? Because there's so much that he is referencing. And a lot of it, like I said, is related to the title, where he's basically reviewing history and art in 20th century Europe. And like we were saying, is the whole Paris 1919 thing happened, like besides the fact that there was like land distribution problem and war reparations, which created all sorts of difficulty, it also basically is the reason why the Third Reich developed in the first place. So all of this is what John Cale is saying. He describes the record as, quote, an example of the nicest ways of saying something ugly, unquote, which goes a long way. Add to that the music and the orchestration, and there's just this weighty sense of, like I said, incredibly, a very active mind who is perceiving things and not worrying about trying to say things or do things experimental that are strange, rather trying to connect with his own history and with his audience. Here's one of, like I said, there's so many geographical references as well, and here's one of them. This song is entitled Andalusia.
Andalusia, when can I see you? When it is snowing out again. Farmer John wants you louder and softer, closer and nearer than again. Needing you, taking you. Doesn't alter, your words never falter. I love you. I'll be here waiting later and later, hoping the night will go. Castles and Christians, Andalusia, come to stay. You were lost once before, on the day, much like this, when you'd made up your mind not to come. I couldn't persuade you, or wait till tomorrow. John wants you louder and softer, closer and nearer than again. Needing you, taking you, keeping you, leaving you in a year and a day. That your face doesn't alter, your words never falter. I love you.
This is, I mean, there's so much about this album that has my head spinning. The fact that's Lowell George and Richie Hayward of Little Feat.
Oh, wow.
On this record, on every, I mean, they are the band, along with Milton Felder from the Crusaders. So at this point in time, Little Feat had three albums out. And Heidi, you know that as well as I do at this point, simply because up until now, in doing this series, we covered three Little Feat albums. And it was only like a few weeks back when we played the album Dixie Chicken. So Little Feat was up to that point in their career. And yet here is Lowell George taking session work with Richie Hayward on this album. And this is totally different. It's very, I mean, they're both great. I love Little Feat. They're one of my favorite bands. But I actually, you know, this album is stunning. And it, but yet it sounds nothing like Little Feat. But all the guitar is Lowell George. All of the drums is Richie Hayward. And I never knew that because there were never any credits put on the album when it was released. So when you bought the record, the only thing you knew is that it was a John Cale album. There was nothing there. And it took me, I think I found this out sometime, like maybe 20 years later, after being familiar with this album for a very long time, it was pointed out to me that they were the players on the record. And that, I'm still astounded. It's just hard. It's something to behold. All right, last song on side one from the album Paris 1919, which was John Cale's third album, is a song called Macbeth on 90.3 WHPC. Track is called Macbeth. And had I been paying attention closely enough, that is the song where I would have been able to figure out
Yeah, that guitar style is very distinct, isn't it? That sort of screeching.
That wonderful screaming. Slide thing. And Lowell George is very great at going way up on the neck and, you know, like, you know, it's a, he's. And that and the drums even, it's like, wow, that kind of sounds like Richie Hayward on drums as well. But yeah, that's the song where had I been even just suspicious, I might have said, wow, that sounds a lot like Lowell George. But I mean, it seems like such a crazy mix. I just would never expect John Cale, a Welshman, ex-member of Velvet Underground, New York band, playing with this Los Angeles group of musicians. And I'm wondering, maybe it has something to do with the production, with the producer, Chris Thomas, who had done a lot of work with Procol Harum, is the producer of this album. And I can hear when I listen to this record, I'm like, oh, there's like a sort of a Procol Harum thing going on with the way the sounds mix. But the combination of John Cale and Little Feat still blows my mind. All right, we flip the record, and first up on side two is the title track, the song called Paris 1919.
Sense. Just a visitor, you see, so much wanting to be seen. She'd open up the doors and vaguely carry us away. It's the customary thing to say or do to a disappointed proud man in his grief. And on Fridays she'd be there, but on Mondays not at all. Just casually appearing from the clock across the hall. You're a ghost, la 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 la. You're a ghost, la 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 la. I'm the church and I come to claim you with my iron drum. La 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 la. Singing tediously, you're a ghost, la 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 la. Yes, you're a ghost, la 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 la. I'm the bishop and I've come to claim you with my iron drum, la 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 la.
Come to claim you with my iron drum, la 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 la. You're a ghost.
the lyrics are deep and a bit impenetrable. I interpret it as being sort of about what it would have felt like at the end of World War One, like, oh, thank God that's over, but also a really strange impending sense of, yeah, but now what? We're not in any better place than we were before the war. Maybe I think things felt even less secure at the end of World War One. And if you were interested in studying early 20th century history, you could do a lot worse than listening to this album and writing down some of its topics and then looking up what it is that they are actually about. So you could actually to piece it all together. Andalusia, Paris, 1919, Graham Greene. Speaking of which, that's the name of the next song. Let's play it.
You're having tea with Graham Greene in the colored costume of your choice, and you'll be thought in high esteem if you're seen in between. Stiffly holding umbrellas, catching the fellas, making the toast to the civil servant Carruthers, making the others worse than most. You're making small talk now with the Queen and the elegant ladies in waiting. You're very nervous, they cannot tell. Pretty well, they can tell. So save yourself for the hounds of hell. They can have you all to themselves. Since the fashion now is to give away all the things that you love so well. Oh, welcome back to Chipping and Sudbury. You can have a second chance. It must all be like second nature, cutting down the people where they stand. According to the latest score, Mr. Enoch Powell is a falling star. So in the future, please bear in mind, don't see clear, don't see far. When the average social director mistakes a passenger for the conductor, it's so shocking to see the old Church of E looking down on you and me. So welcome back to Chipping and Sudbury. You can have another chance. It must all be like second nature, chopping down the people where they stand.
Interesting there, a little touch of like a bit of a reggae beat there on the album Paris 1919, which we're playing in its entirety. I don't know if you know this, Heidi, that John Cale is pretty much just as famous for some of the bands that he's produced. He had a very adventurous, to say the least, side to him musically, and he would love to get involved with artists who were young, a bit on the outside at the time when they were developing. And before this album, he was the person who produced The Stooges, the first Iggy Pop album that was produced by John Cale. He later would go on to produce The Modern Lovers, Jonathan Richman and The Modern Lovers. Now, that was cool because Jonathan Richman, if you saw the movie about the Velvet Underground, they spend a great deal of time interviewing Jonathan Richman. He says that he saw the band play live dozens and dozens of times, and he would act to the point where he would hang out with them. He said they were all very kind to him, and he was a kid, and they were trying to help him as a musician, and to the point where John Cale ended up producing his debut album. Patti Smith's album Horses was produced by John Cale. The first Squeeze album. Imagine that. I will go so far as to admit it was not their best album, but it was John Cale reaching and going for something that was different. And right on up to not too long ago, Alejandro Escovedo's album, The Boxing Mirror, John Cale.
Wow.
So that's a lot of interesting
work. He's a
busy
man.
And that's just a few. All right, a couple tracks left from the album. Let's play the third track on side two. The song is called Half Past France, of course, by John Cale.
I suppose I'm glad I'm on this train, and it's long. Somewhere between Dunkirk and Paris, most people here are still asleep, but I'm awake, looking out from here at half past France. Things are much different here than Norway, not so cold. Wonder when we'll be in Dundee. Old Holweg knows his way around. He's no fool. Wish I'd get to see my son again. But from here on it's got to be a simple case of them or me. If they're alive, then I am dead. Pray God and eat your daily bread. Take your time. We're so far away, floating in this bay. Time.
I'll tell you one of the things that tied me to this album. One of the things that probably, one of many things that make me a pretty weird person is when I was younger, these, you know, the days of vinyl albums, I would very often pick out records to fall asleep to. And for a length of time, there was a, you know, when you could literally do this, this is going to probably make younger people think that, what? But the what you would be able to do is albums, record players would have a spindle in the middle, not just to hold the record in the middle, but the older players that would allow you to literally stack albums on the spindle. And when the album finished, the needle would move out of the way and this mechanical arm would allow a record to drop, and then the needle would come over and play the next album that you put on the spindle. And I would be falling asleep night after night listening to a stack of albums, four sometimes, maybe five. And the music always kept me awake. I don't know. I mean, I did it because I thought it would make me fall asleep. And I picked albums that I thought would be perfect to sleep to. But almost inevitably, I'd basically, it would end and I'd get up and I'd flip them over and play the other side, thus keeping myself awake for 3 or 4 hours. But this album was almost always in the stack because both sides are just, I mean, it's incredibly provocative music, no doubt about it, but it's also soothing. I considered it to be like the type of record that could invoke dreams, just the way it would get your mind going.
Yeah, but your brain was being too much stimulated.
Yeah, because this album still stimulates me. These songs excite me. There's one left from the album. We might have time for a bonus track if we get there. So let's play the last song. The last song of the album is entitled Antarctica Starts Here. And again, I didn't know this at the time, but I now know that it was inspired by the 1950 movie Sunset Boulevard that starred Gloria Swanson, that thing about the old woman in the house and basically trying to maintain her dignity as she, you know, her stardom, the Billy Wilder movie. So this song is entitled Antarctica Starts Here.
So tired now, of kindness is gone by.
Well, there you have it. Great albums are often not beautiful. They are often very challenging and sometimes difficult to listen to. And they can scare people away. It's partly what it is that we're trying to achieve with this show is to basically try to break the ice on some great albums that may be difficult to listen to. But it's wonderful when you find a great album that is also beautiful, challenging and beautiful at the same time. And that is what I love about John Kell's album, Paris 1919. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that I, you know, if you weren't familiar, I hope I turned you on to something that maybe you do want to get into a little bit deeper and look into. I'd say it's very much worth it. I could also mention now that if you like what we do here, we have a website and you can check it out. That's AmericanHitNetwork.com. And if you go there, you can find this show will be up before the night is done, and about maybe 300 or 400 other shows as well. So, and then one more thing, by the way, we have some amazing news. For the second year in a row and the third time out of the past 4 years, WHPC was announced as the best community college radio station in the nation from the Intercollegiate Broadcast System. Definitely. Mic drop. How cool is it to be working at what has been, for three of the past 4 years, the best community college radio station? That is something else. And I just want to basically thanks to Sean, who is the station, basically runs this place
manager.
For us, station manager, and for all the other people that are a part of this, the students, the volunteers. It's amazing. It's a wonderful place to work. And I'm very proud of being able to be here for the past 20 some odd years. All right, let's just drop in one more song. There's a song from the album that followed this, John Kell released an album called Fear. And there's a song on that album that I thought would have fit brilliantly on this one, just for the sake of its beauty. It's called Buffalo Ballet. We'll leave you with that. Take care, folks.
All right, and stay tuned for Rock Overdose.
Wealth and the pain. sleeping in the midday sun, 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 sleeping in the midday sun.